Hey everyone, it's Hamish from the Young Investors Podcast. Myself and Brandon are excited to bring you your weekly rundown of the latest business and investing news from around the world. A quick reminder before we get started, any advice provided by Brandon is general and does not consider your financial situation, needs, or objectives, so consider whether it's appropriate for you. Brandon van der Kolk is authorized to provide general financial product advice in Australia and is authorized representative number 1305795 of Guideway Financial Services Proprietary Limited, AFSL number 420367. Please see the description box for Brandon's financial services guide. Past performance is not a reliable indication of future investment returns. But with that said, let's get into another episode of the Young Investors Podcast.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. Welcome back, Hamish.
Hello, hello, hello.
What's going on, my friend?
What's going on? Oh, not much. I learned a new skill this week. I learned how to change...
You learned a new skill?
Yeah, I learned how to change a tire.
Oh, really?
Because I got a flat tire. Yeah. Actually, not as hard as I thought it would be to change a tire. Actually, pretty simple. Pretty easy.
Look at you.
Yeah, look at that.
Handy man.
I looked up a YouTube video and off I went.
Nice. Where'd you get the flat? Was it like on a highway or something?
I don't know where I got it because I just came home and then overnight, it has like a nail in it. So I guess it went down kind of slowly. And then in the morning, I was like, oh, yep, that tire's flat. So... I don't know where I got it, but yeah.
So you had a spare in your boot or something?
Yeah, luckily. And the spare wasn't flat, fortunately, because that is something I would do. That is something I would definitely do, which is change the tire and then not replace the spare. but I've never done that, so yeah. But I'll probably do that now. Like, what's the chance I get another flat, right? So I can probably roll with the spare, you know, with no spare for a while, right? Right.
Yeah. I got to tell you a story that I got a similar tire story. So I drive a Tesla Model 3 Performance, which is a fun car, and the ongoing costs are low except for tires. The tires are expensive. Yeah, cuz they run Pirelli P0s. Can't remember how much. I think it costs like $2,000 to replace all four. Quite expensive tires. Jeez. Yeah. And anyway, so I noticed that my tires were getting low. I went into the tire place and they replaced all four. Okay. And I didn't realize how expensive the tires were going to be. And they told me, I was like, this hurts a lot. But I was like, okay. I was like, are you sure that I need to replace all four? They're like, yeah, replace all four. And I was like, okay, replace all four. So I got them replaced, right?
Yeah.
And then just 3 days later, I'm driving around on my new tires, heavy rain on the highway, boom, boom, pothole, burst two of them. Two of my brand new tires.
Jesus.
So I'm like screaming because I'm like $1,000 in the hole at this point. I've got two new tires and I've just hit a pothole and they're both flat. And now I need to pay, like, that's just the worst luck ever, right?
Yeah, that is insane. I swear that always happens, though. That's exactly how it always happens. Like, it's never the other way around.
When it rains, it pours.
It's never, I'm heading towards the place to change four tires and two of them, you know, and then I go into a pothole and burst through, like, oh, well, I was changing them anyway. It's never that. It's always the reverse.
Nah. Yeah, it's always the reverse. So that was, oh man, that was so frustrating. Yeah, that's so frustrating.
That's definitely worse than my story. Mine wasn't even that bad. There wasn't really any inconvenience or anything. So,
yeah. But anyway, how you been? You been all right?
Yeah. Going well. We're in the thick of earnings season at the moment. We've got a lot to cover today. We'll go through Google and Meta, as we mentioned last week. It's always fun that they kind of report in the same week so we can kind of compare and contrast them together. I also chucked in Snapchat as well as like another kind of smaller social media giant. I don't know. Can we really call them a giant at this point? They're a social media company. They do social media stuff. So I thought we'd chuck them in. And I also chucked in Spotify as well, which I don't think we've really covered before, but I thought some of their results were kind of interesting. So that's our earnings.
The only thing I know about Spotify is I think for the longest time they just haven't made any money whatsoever.
Yeah, that's the story. Yep,
that's about right. Yeah. Okay, because I remember being baffled by that because everybody that I know uses Spotify, and so many of my friends have Spotify Premium, so they're paying good. You know, they're paying their good subscription fees.
Yeah,
like it's not uncommon For I reckon more of my friends have Spotify Premium than have Netflix. And I'm
really?
Not even kidding.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
So, so I was very baffled when I read that one day Spotify just does not make any money. I was like, how is that possible?
Yeah.
But anyway, I guess that's what you're going to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. And then what else have we? Yeah. What else have we got?
I'm just going to talk about Google earnings. I got a fair bit to say on Google, and interesting move during the week. China is moving to support its economy. There's been a lot of criticism, I guess, of China not stepping in and providing economic stimulus.
Right.
But they are starting to do that. Wow. So we'll talk about that as well.
Awesome. Well, with that said, today's episode is brought to you by Seeking Alpha, your one-stop shop for stock analysis, market data, and news. Access expert analysis and news for thousands of stocks. View buy, hold, and sell ratings from members, Wall Street analysts, and Seeking Alpha's own algorithm. Screen for stocks using a variety of fundamental and technical analysis metrics. Access 10 years of financial data and company filings. And manage your portfolio by tracking your investments with price alerts so you never miss a buying opportunity again. Click the link in the episode description or head directly to seekingalpha.me/younginvestors to try Seeking Alpha free for 7 days. And you can also still get a $50 off coupon when you sign up to a subscription for the first time. And as always, thanks to those who have used our link when signing up to Seeking Alpha and are supporting the podcast.
All right. All right. What a clean
so
read that
where
was,
should
Hamish.
We...
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Where should we begin?
Where should we... I think...
take us through Meta. You want to take us through Meta? Sorry, I think we're breaking up a little bit today. We're having a little bit of audio issues. Jeez, I thought we left those in the past. We used to get audio issues all the time, but we're having a little bit of lag today. Take us through Meta, Hamish. I'll shut up for a while.
Yeah, let's do it. So, as I mentioned, we get Google and Meta, and we can kind of compare and contrast. It's always fun. So, starting with Meta Platforms, for the quarter, the third quarter, they reported revenue of $34.1 billion, which was up 23% year over year, which is massive. The advertising businesses have kind of, a year or two ago, they had a really strong run-up out of COVID, and then even after COVID, and then they were still growing, but they were kind of tapering, growth was kind of moderating a little bit. Meta Platforms posting an absolutely massive revenue quarter, 23% growth, $34 billion, which is massive. When it comes to Meta Platforms, of course, the story is around their advertising business and, of course, the user base on their social media platforms. So in terms of the what they call family daily active people, which is how many people are using any of their social media apps every single day, that figure came in at 3.14 billion people, which was up 7% year over year. The monthly family of apps people came in at 3.96 billion people, up 7% as well year over year. And then in terms of the Facebook and Messenger platforms specifically, their daily active users came in at 2.09 billion people, up 5% year over year. And monthly active users was 3.05 billion, up 3%. Which is
hectic.
Yes, stagger. As we always say, just staggering that they continue. I mean, to continue growing it, daily active users at 7% annually. Like it's still, you know, I think there's been a lot of talk of that slowdown in growth, and eventually it's going to grind to a halt because they're going to run out of people. But they are still growing at a very decent clip. 7% isn't nothing, especially when you're already at 4 billion monthly active users.
That size, it's interesting. Like if with growth rates, like when you're small, it depends on the company size. If you're really small, then that growth rate is not very impressive. But when you're like what you say, when you're massive, that growth rate is impressive. Like the fact, because like 7% growth equates to, you know, millions and millions of people. So no, it is still impressive, and they continue to wiggle their way and find the markets that they were, you know, poorer in, and they continue to add more active users. But yeah, it's kind of crazy. It's also interesting, I find, how over time, like as Facebook, I feel like Facebook now is kind of a little, it's like the legacy platform, it's like the older platform. But they've done really well, especially with growing Instagram over time. Like, as Facebook maybe trends out of favor, they've got other options. They've got the Instagram platform to take its place. They've got, you know,
yep,
they've hooked people on WhatsApp and Messenger, so they're always messaging on Facebook's platform no matter what. It's interesting. They've done well.
Yeah. They actually added, I just calculated it because I did it in my head and I wasn't sure if it was correct, 280 million people they've added to their platform in the last 12 months, which is just an astounding figure to add.
It's remarkable.
Yeah, it's insane. So that's kind of on the user front. And then, of course, Meta always gives some interesting information around their advertising business and specifically their ads and how they're performing. So this always, they always talk about ad impressions, so the number of ads being served, and then the price per ad. And the story recently has been ad impressions going up a lot and the price per ad coming down as more people are spending time on reels and on stories where they're able to place more ads, but the ads are less effective. So advertisers pay less for them. And that story continued this quarter. So ad impressions were up 31% year over year. So that's an enormous, you can imagine how many ads Meta Platforms is serving across their platforms. Increased 31% the number of ads, which is an enormous figure given they're already a behemoth. So it really does give you an idea of the almost the change in business, really, from, you know, ads that are much more stagnant to ads on reels where people are really kind of, you can go through, you know, 10, 20 ads within a couple of minutes, really, if you're on reels, for example. And then, as you would expect, the price per ad declined, but only by 6%. So they only saw, you know, a minor decrease in the price per ad, which is obviously very, very good, and resulted in 23% increase in revenue, which is insane.
Hectic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know if I have much to add to that, but that's quite a bump.
Yeah.
It's quite a bump.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very impressive. On a products front, of course, Meta isn't just an advertising business. They also have some physical products, especially relating to their virtual reality and augmented reality business, Reality Labs. They launched Quest 3, which is their newest it's kind of their main VR product. Not the highest end one, but the one that's reasonably priced and mass market is the word I was kind of looking for.
Yep.
So they released that headset. Supposedly it's very impressive. Got a bunch of new tech inside of it. And they also launched the second version of their Ray-Ban Meta Smart Glasses, which are the kind of Ray-Ban glasses that have a camera in them, and you can now live stream from them to Instagram and take photos and that sort of thing. And they actually look, they redid the designs, and they've actually got two different designs now, and they actually look pretty good. Like, it
really,
besides,
let's have a look.
I reckon if you didn't know what those glasses were and you saw someone wear them, I don't think you would know that they're smart glasses. I really don't. I mean,
right,
I think if you've seen them before, you can obviously see the camera, but it almost does just look like it's a part of the design. I think if you had no idea what these glasses were, I don't think you would look at these glasses and go, oh, they're smart glasses, unless you had already seen them before, I think. But they're actually kind of cool.
That's true. It's quite well hidden now, and it doesn't look, even the, I imagine like the battery and stuff is in the, it's in the, I don't know what you call that part, the frame that goes towards your ear.
Yeah, yeah.
But it doesn't, you're right. It doesn't look as bulky and as clunky.
Yeah.
As, it actually looks quite good.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. It's well hidden because, I wonder if I have my glasses here. Yeah, here you go. So the camera, these aren't the ones, but the normal Ray-Bans, they have this little etching design piece on the side. And instead of having that, you just have a small camera. So it makes sense why you can't really tell that there's a camera there, because Ray-Bans actually have something there in their design anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll do the whole rest of the podcast with my glasses on. I'm too cool.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, we'll both get smart glasses, and we'll do, instead of having the camera on us, We'll do like POV of the podcast. We'll both record.
Hamish, that is a terrible idea, mate. That's such a bad idea. Sometimes you come up with good ideas, but that's a terrible idea.
I think that'll work.
What? So people are just going to be looking at you through the projection
What
are you talking about, mate?
So they get to see. Yeah, I don't know. Okay. All right, moving on.
No, I don't know. Move on. Cancel that. That's a Hamish. Anyway. All right, next one.
Anyway.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So yeah, they launched new products.
Back to Meta.
They launched new products. They're pretty cool. We don't know how they're selling though. No information on that, which is kind of important. But that's all right. Maybe we'll get that one day. We'll get that the day that they start selling like a good amount of these products.
Exactly. Ain't that the truth?
Yeah.
Ain't that the truth?
So keeping going down the income statement. Even though they increased revenue by 23%, costs and expenses declined by 7% year over year. So not only were they able to increase revenue massively, they also were able to reduce costs significantly. They did a bunch of layoffs and a bunch of other cost initiatives. And that means that on a net income basis, whenever you have revenue going up and costs going down, you know it's going to be good for profits at the bottom. Mm. Net income came in at $11.6 billion, up 164% year over year. So...
Wowzers, that 164 looks massive, doesn't it?
Yeah.
it's a big number to post.
Yeah, yeah.
I imagine that's because they struggled so much a year ago.
Yeah, certainly, yeah. I mean, they've been spending a lot of money on this Reality Labs venture, and they still are, but certainly it was felt more significantly, I think, in the last few quarters. And now, I don't know, they're kind of back in the driver's seat a little bit. And they're certainly winning investors' expectations over again with how the stock has kind of recovered since it's a disaster of, what was it, 2022 or it must have been, or
yeah,
something like that.
You want a stock update?
Yeah, give us a stock update.
So, in where did it reach its high? In September of 2021, and it was at $380 a share.
Yeah.
Then, fast forward to its low point in November 2022, and it was down 76%.
That's crazy.
So it was down to like $90 a share.
Yeah.
And then since it hit $90 a share, it's been on an absolute tear, and it's back up 229% to now it sits at $300 a share.
Yeah, it's insane. Yeah. We spoke about...
And this is what Seth Klarman... Sorry, no, I was just going to make the point. This is what Seth Klarman talks about, where he's just like, you know, mispricings do happen in the market. People say value investing's dead. And generally, if you're just looking at the massive companies, sometimes you do have to get a bit more creative and look elsewhere to get really good value investing deals. But Seth Klarman made the point that, you know, these events that bring down companies to margin of safety prices, they still do happen even in big companies. You just have to be patient and you have to be vigilant. And he uses Meta as an example. I think he owns Meta shares, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
At least
he did.
But yeah, he used Meta as an example, you know, $378 per share down to $90 per share. That's a massive drop.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you had done the research and figured out that Meta was a good kind of investment for you, then $90 per share is ridiculous. And sure enough, it's bounced back up now to $300. So yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. $380 to $90 to $300.
Yeah.
You know, you can't say that big companies still don't move. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's crazy. And you know, and that's in the internet age where information is all available and theoretically with all this information around and everyone acting rationally, prices should be very, very efficient. And in some aspects, I'm sure they have become more efficient. But investor psychology is still a very real thing. Even in institutional investors that are really pushing these stocks around, there's a lot of mind games that goes into their decisions to sell a stock or, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of a stock. And we've seen it. We spoke about Netflix last week was one, and Meta this week is another. Two massive $100+ billion companies. Meta's I don't even know how much they're worth.
$700 billion
company. Yeah. Enormous. It's probably a top 10 most valuable company in the world. And it went through kind of that swing. So yeah, it's been fascinating to watch and kind of observe that. The CFO kind of gave his regular statement. One interesting thing that I thought was that I kind of noted was just a little bit of a commentary on the ongoing regulatory challenges. So this is the quote from the press release. We continue to monitor the active regulatory landscape, including the increased legal and regulatory headwinds in the EU and US that could significantly impact our business and financial results. Of note, the Federal Trade Commission is seeking to substantially modify our existing consent order and impose additional restrictions on our ability to operate. We are contesting this matter, but if we are unsuccessful, it would have an adverse impact on our business. So I thought that was interesting that they kind of actually included it's not too common that you see just a kind of a risk factor be actually presented in the press release. And what they're talking about is the FTC battle that they're facing, and actually a bunch of other tech companies are in FTC battles at the moment. This one specifically started in 2021, Meta or Facebook at the time was accused of accumulating monopoly power via anti-competitive mergers, specifically Instagram and WhatsApp. So that's kind of their ongoing battle. Google's also in a battle. Microsoft's in a battle. I think Microsoft's in it. I'm not sure if that's still ongoing.
They probably all are.
To be honest, Amazon's definitely in a battle. I think the head of the FTC has it out for Amazon. So they're all every big company in the US, every big tech company is facing anti-competitive regulatory challenges. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. Yep. They kind of
made non-recurring expenses.
Exactly. Yeah, non-recurring legal expenses.
Those fines.
Yeah.
FTC fine. Yeah, we face a large non-recurring expense that we'll pay next year as well.
Yeah.
it's just a toll at this point, isn't it? It's just a toll. It's just a part of doing business for them.
Yeah, exactly. In terms of their balance sheet, it's always interesting to kind of have a look at how they're going. They continue to be just a cash machine. They've got $61 billion in cash and marketable securities, only $18 billion in debt. They did $3.5 billion of share repurchases, but for the most part, they took their cash and they shoved it in the bank account, as they do pretty much every quarter. So, they continue to stack cash. So even though they are spending a lot of money on virtual reality, they can afford it. As long as it is produces cash out the other side, they've got plenty of money to play with.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, good on them. They're using their cash and they're trying to do something with it. I don't know. More so than like Apple, who just makes a lot of cash and then just gives it to shareholders.
Yeah.
We'll come up with the next slight improvement of the iPhone next year and the next slight improvement of anything. And yeah, that'll do us. Then we'll just give you guys a whole bunch of money.
Yeah, it is more exciting when the companies actually have things to spend money on. I mean, obviously, you know, getting cash kicked out of the business is great, but then you've got to go and find somewhere else to put it. So it's always fun to see, especially big businesses. You don't see big businesses taking risks very often. It's kind of unfortunate. Like, I think YouTube suffers that fate as a part of Google, is that there's some good changes that could happen to YouTube, but it's just, you can just tell, it's just, everything is going through like 10 layers of bureaucracy and nothing ever gets through, and changes take
nothing
so long
changes.
And it's just kind of frustrating, and that's just the way big business goes. So it is exciting to see, you know, Zuckerberg kind of still being able to steer the ship however he wants. Like, it's kind of a younger company, which is, it's good to see.
Yeah, it's cool. Anything else on the old Meta platforms?
Nope, that's it. Give us Alphabet, give us Google.
All right.
We'll compare and contrast.
I shall, Hamish, I shall. So, shares dropped 7% on Google earnings, which is interesting. They CNBC noted as the cloud business missed analysts' estimates. Oh. I think the cloud business did all right, personally. But anyway, that's what do I know exactly?
Are you an analyst? Are you a Wall Street analyst, Brandon?
No, I'm not. Yeah. Thank goodness I'm not. Thank God I didn't go down that path. All right. Revenue for Google for Alphabet up 11% year over year to $76.7 billion. And the thing I like about Google's earnings releases, they give you that nice revenue breakdown and that nice operating income breakdown of all of their businesses. So we've got Google advertising overall. Okay, overall Google advertising was up from $54.5 billion to $59.6 billion. So a good amount of growth in Google advertising. So how does that break down? Well, first of all, we've got their big category, which is Google Search and Other. So that rose from $39.5 billion to $44 billion. So that's up 11% year over year for Google Search.
Right.
Then as well in Google advertising, you have YouTube ads. So YouTube ads went from $7.1 billion to $8 billion, so up 12%. And then Google Network, so third-party network Google Ads, fell from $7.9 billion to $7.7 billion, right. So down 2.6%. So relatively flat there.
Yeah.
So they continue to see pretty solid growth in search revenue and ads revenue. Then apart from that, we've got Google Other, $6.9 billion to $8.3 billion, so up 21% year over year. And if I'm not mistaken, that's things like Android, Chrome, what else? Hardware sales, all that sort of stuff gets lumped into other. And then we've got Google Cloud, which is obviously a very highly watched part of their business. In terms of revenue, went from $6.9 billion to $8.4 billion, so up 22% year over year.
Pretty good.
So really solid growth coming from both all of the other stuff that they group together, that's not just Google advertising, and also their cloud business, up 21% and 22% year over year in terms of revenue, respectively. So, I don't know, I thought that was pretty good.
It's pretty impressive, yeah. I don't know if
it's solid growth.
I don't know if you're going to talk about this, but on the YouTube front, I think recently they've been testing actually blocking people or stopping people from using ad blockers. I don't know if you saw this. So, you know, like a lot
I've seen this, but I wasn't going to talk about it.
Yeah, like a lot of kind of news places will actually stop you from using an ad blocker. You have to kind of turn it off. And YouTube hasn't kind of done that up until now. You can just use an ad blocker. And I think like a very large percentage of people who watch YouTube use ad blockers, like 30 or 40% or some insane figure. But yeah, recently they were found out to be kind of testing, or some people noticed that they were testing stopping people from using ad blockers, which would be interesting to see if they roll that out, how that kind of plays out, I guess. I don't know.
Have you seen it? Has it happened to you?
Well, I don't use Adblock, but so I don't know.
Oh, right.
Yeah. No, I have YouTube Premium, so well, I don't know. I think I think it would be a bit hypocritical to use Adblock. We rely heavily on ads.
I have Adblock, but I also have YouTube Premium.
Yeah, okay.
But on the account where I don't have YouTube, because I have multiple accounts because we test stuff. So on the account where I don't have YouTube Premium, my ad block kicks in and it just comes up with a pop-up which says ad blockers are not allowed on YouTube. But it's kind of like how it's a skippable ad. That pop-up comes up and you can't get rid of it for like 5 seconds. It's got a little progress bar that fills up and then it goes up. And then you can just click X like you would skip an ad, and then it plays a video.
That's actually quite clever, because then it's like it's no different than just getting served an ad in a way. So maybe people will then be just enticed to ultimately sign up for premium or to just, you know, cop the ads, I guess. Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Interesting. So it's an interesting approach. So
That's how it was working for me. That's how it was working for me. So yeah, very interesting. It'll be interesting to see if we see a change in revenue or CPM or anything like that from their attack on Adblock.
I would imagine it wouldn't be crazy different because we get paid.
Well, if you're saying 30 to 40%, right?
Yeah, I guess the question would be, because we get paid per click, right? So the question would be, are people who use Adblock less likely or equally likely to click on ads than other people who are not using Adblock, I guess? Like some people would make the argument that people who use Adblock are the people who would never click on ads. I probably don't agree with that. I don't think that really makes any sense, I think.
Wait, is that actually how it works? Do I just not know about this? We get paid we get paid per click.
Yeah.
So someone has to click on the ad.
Yeah, so advertisers pay per click, or they pay if you've watched 50%, more than 50% of the ad. Or if it's one of those really long ads, I think it's more than a minute of the ad or something like that. Yeah, so
right, so it's not just per click.
No,
right.
It's not just per click. No.
Right.
But yeah, if an ad is served and you skip it within 5 seconds, the advertiser doesn't pay for that ad. They're only paying if you engage with the ad, essentially. So there's an argument that people who use Adblock wouldn't watch as would are less likely to click on ads. But I'm not sure if I necessarily agree with that. but yeah, I guess we'll have to find out. Maybe we'll see. It could be substantial because I think I'm pretty sure it was a very large percentage of users who use Adblock. So it'd be interesting to see how that changes.
We shall see.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got revenue up 11%. Let's talk about operating income. So what do they keep? Well, almost what do they keep? Operating income was up from 17.1 billion to 21.3 billion. So in terms of, let's talk about those same kind of categories. In terms of Google services, their operating income went up from 18.9 billion to 23.9 billion. So up 26%, 26.7% year over year. And Google services includes products such as ads, Android, Chrome, hardware, Google Maps, Google Play, search, YouTube, all of it. And then, so that's the first category. So from 18.9 billion to 23.9 billion. So that's powering ahead. Then Google Cloud operating income went from negative 444 million to positive 266 million. So
all right.
I think that's actually, because we've known that, you know, their cloud business, sure, it pulls in all this revenue, but in terms of operating income, in terms of profit, doesn't really make any money yet.
Yeah.
But that is starting to change. Yeah, it's only just making money, but it is starting to up into the positive.
Interesting. Yeah, because I think for quite a few quarters or maybe even a couple of years, I think cloud revenue it's always been negative, but getting slightly less and less negative. So, and then I think a couple of quarters ago, they had a really minor profit. But now, it looks like they're starting to really build profitability. They spent a lot to build the infrastructure for additional cloud sales early on. So they were kind of front loading costs, getting everything set up so that they wouldn't limit their revenue growth and limit their ability to capture market share. And it seems like maybe we're seeing a bit of an inflection point of at least one stage of that.
Mm. They knew they wanted to be a big player in cloud.
Yeah.
They knew they wanted to be that one of the top dogs. And interestingly, from the conference call, Sundar noted that more than 60% of the world's 1,000 largest companies are Google Cloud customers.
Wow. There you go. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. That's interesting. Yeah.
That's pretty impressive, I would say. So that's what's going on at cloud. And then other bets was roughly the same year over year. In terms of operating margin, they had an operating margin of 28% versus 25% a year ago, so a little improvement in operating margin. Net income was up from 13.9 billion to 19.7 billion year over year. So solid growth in the net income. In terms of other stuff, so their total traffic acquisition cost rose slightly from 11.8 billion to 12.6 billion. This is the amount that it costs Google to acquire their traffic. So they generate 4.72 times more ad revenue than what it costs them to get traffic, which is interesting. And in terms of headcount, similar story to what you were talking about with Meta, headcount went from 186,000 to 182,000. So they got rid of about 4,400 employees.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Lolly Focus Pops or Lolly Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Right, there you go.
Now, in terms of, I had to wait until this morning to get this number because their 10Q wasn't out yet. Let's talk about paid clicks, cost per click, impressions. We can start with impressions, maybe. So impressions, their change in impressions was down 2%, and their cost per impression was down 3% for the quarter year over year. And their paid clicks change. So they had 8% more paid clicks, but their cost per click fell 2%. Cost per click fell 2%.
Right.
Hamish, what do you make of that? So they're getting more clicks. However, the revenue they're generating from each of those clicks fell slightly.
Yeah, I mean,
what was Meta's was that similar story for Meta?
Same story for Meta, and that's what you would expect. So I'm just trying to find it, but that's what you would expect from Google as well. They are also making a push towards short form, to a lesser extent, I would imagine, as a part of their business than Meta, but that's what you would expect. Sorry, I didn't hear the exact numbers you said because I was looking something
else.
That's
okay. Paid clicks were up 2%.
Okay.
Paid clicks were up 8%, and cost per click was down 2%.
Yeah.
That probably makes sense because Google is less all in on short form ad, whereas Meta is going to face a sharper swing because of short form ads not making as much money.
Yeah. Yeah, Meta's was...
I think that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, yeah. Meta's was impressions up 31%. So they use clicks. Meta uses impressions, but they can kind of be used interchangeably. And then the price per ad was down 6%. So yeah, Meta experiencing much more of a stronger pull in that respect, but the same effect. Sorry, I was looking up... I zoned out because I was looking up...
Sorry, mate.
I was looking up something related to traffic acquisition costs that I remember seeing a couple of weeks ago that blew my mind. How much Google pays Apple to be the default search engine on iOS? They pay them.
Google pays right.
They pay them $18 to $20 billion a year.
Wow!
Isn't that a crazy stat? So that's what I was just looking up just to make sure I had the numbers right. So like, I think it's about half of their traffic acquisition costs, or something insane like that, is going to Apple. Which is a crazy gate that Apple has that I don't think a lot of people talk about. You know, talk about the walled garden, like Google trying to get in the walled garden. You know, like just the toll fee on that is insane. $20 billion a year to do nothing.
Yeah, but, that's a massive
but to give toll. Up to give up to give up the search engine spot on
default
Safari
search.
And that sort of thing. Yeah, crazy stat.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
That is actually ridiculous. Wowee. Apple, hey?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cha-ching. All right, what else have I got to talk about? Just some interesting stuff in their balance sheet. Their cash plus marketable securities was $119.9 billion, up from $113.8 billion a year ago. So get this right. They have current assets, $176.3 billion. They have current liabilities of $86.3 billion.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Current ratio 2.04. Long-term debt. So just refresh. Current assets. Let's not even talk current assets. Let's talk cash and marketable securities. $119.9 billion. And long-term debt, $13.7
billion. Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. It's nothing. Absolutely.
It's crazy. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Exactly right. Cash flow statement. Operating cash flow of $30.7 billion. CapEx of $8 billion. Free cash flow of $22.6 billion.
Mm.
So still very pumping out a lot of free cash, Hamish. Quite a lot.
Yeah, they could afford to pay. Apple.
In terms of their conference, they can afford. Yeah, exactly right. In terms of their conference call, nothing groundbreaking. Talking about AI, they're trying to incorporate generative AI into search more and more. So incorporating images and video into search, they're continuing to experiment. They want search to be able to answer a broader range of questions. In terms of Bard, they treat it as an early stage experiment. It can now integrate with Google Maps, Workspace, Google Flights, hotels, and YouTube now, which they're going to continue to increase that functionality. Bard now also works with Google Assistant.
Nice.
And they continue to allow more customers to build apps on their AI platforms. In terms of YouTube, they said they're focused on closing the monetization gap on shorts, which I find interesting, but he didn't add more kind of flavor as to exactly what he means on that. Is it the monetization gap between short-form content and long-form content, or is it more the monetization gap between their short-form content versus other platforms' short-form content?
I would guess it's compared to long-form because I'm pretty sure YouTube has the best monetization by landslide on short-form. I don't think...
Oh, okay.
I don't think... Well, Reels, you don't get anything, as far as I'm aware. And I think TikTok still just has the creator fund, so it's not as if you're actually getting paid per as a share of revenue. You're just getting... know, part of this fund. Maybe I'm wrong on that. That might have changed. I'm not actually entirely sure. But my guess is the monetization gap to long form, which you don't really make all that much money on shorts at the moment.
No. I mean, that's honestly, that's what they need to do to make YouTube shorts more. I mean, if you pay, it's economics, right? If you pay the people, they will come. Like if you pay them more money to make shorts, then more people will make shorts.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Pretty much. Yeah.
So, and that's why a lot of big creators still don't really make shorts. I don't make shorts because the amount of effort that you put into shorts for the return that you get is just silly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just silly.
Yeah. That
you might get a ton of views, but you make a couple of dollars, like actually.
Yeah.
I'm not even exaggerating that.
And they don't even really convert. Your viewers on shorts don't really convert in a good way to long form either. A lot of people struggle with that, which is if they make both, and they have a big shorts platform, converting those people to watch their longer form, their newer longer form content, is really difficult. And I think it's just, you know, they're completely different products in a lot of cases. Sometimes it's great overlap. I think like podcasts, for example, is probably the perfect example of the perfect crossover for short form, because the shorts are kind of like a teaser. They're like trailers basically for the long form. So you probably get quite good conversion, but for other types of content, I think it's a little bit trickier, to work out how to get the best out of both of them.
And that's all I got for Google. Cool. That is it.
All right.
So do you want to keep a good thing running and talk about, Snap?
Yeah. Let's, keep a good thing running. Well, that's it.
Maybe not.
Maybe not. No. I thought we'd chuck in Snapchat there. Yeah, I'm not sure if I'd call their results good, but
okay.
But they definitely it makes sense to talk about them, I think, alongside the other two giants. Because I don't know, it's kind of funny to me, just we're talking about, you know, 30 billion, 80 billion in revenue, this and that, spending 20 billion on Apple. Mm. And then, you know, Snapchat, which is a very big social platform, is just, you know, hasn't been able to, you know, get on the same level as some of these other giants. But anyway, for their quarterly earnings, their revenue came in at $1.2 billion, which was up 5% year over year. So, they
didn't realize it was that tiny.
Yeah, they're quite a bit smaller than the other two, and not really growing as well. 5%. Growth, and that actually comes after two consecutive quarterly declines in revenue. Especially this year, they've been struggling quite a lot. In terms of their users, daily active users came in at 406 million, up 12% year over year. So they're still getting decent growth out of their users. But again, you know, they're a fraction of the size of what we talk about Meta with, you know, 4 billion. monthly active users across their platforms. Snapchat is kind of just a tenth of the size of Meta's social media behemoth. Since they included this in their press release, since launching their AI-powered chatbot earlier this year, 200 million people have used it, sending 20 billion messages. So they launched this ChatGPT style chatbot in Snapchat earlier this year. And why am I telling you this? Because the company didn't include anything else in the press release. That's pretty much it.
Wait, what?
There's no information on ad impressions. There's no information on clicks. There's no information on price per ad. There's basically nothing about their actual business, but 200 million people have said hello to a AI chatbot, which is important.
Interesting. Almost as though they don't want to include that data.
Yeah, it's strange. Why wouldn't... I can't think of a reason why they wouldn't give us clarity on how many ads they're serving. It is just unfortunate. I mean, their business has been doing kind of rocky. So, the management team's going to not be super transparent.
Try and keep quiet.
Yeah, so it's unfortunate. There's not really all that much to say. That's why I was going to just tack it on the end of Meta and Google, because there's not all that much to really say. Besides the financial statements, they didn't really include anything else. In terms of their income statement, they had a net loss, so they're still losing money, of $368 million, which was about the same as last year. Pretty much all there was on their press release. So yeah, very different to the other businesses.
It blows my mind that they can't make money. I don't know. It blows my mind that their daily active users is not higher. I see.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just like suffering. I don't know what the effect is that I'm, you know, it's like I'm one case study and I'm specifically in Australia. I'm specifically, you know, I'm interacting with more people in their 20s, but I see like people using Snapchat all the time.
Really?
Like if you like go for a night out or something, or you go to a bar, like everybody is just on Snapchat.
Really?
I don't know. I'm not personally, but everybody is.
I think the problem is other social media platforms, they were able to grab the younger audience, like teenagers, and then those platforms are still kind of relevant, I think, to even adults of different ages. Like I think Instagram has a pretty wide, diverse user base. Facebook is even more diverse. Whereas I think Snapchat must be very concentrated on kind of younger people, and maybe as people get older, they gravitate away towards other social platforms. That would be just my guess. It is strange to see. I guess maybe it's also more of an American kind of rather than a very international service. I don't know. That's just another guess. 400 million users is, you know, it's a lot of users, but yeah, when you talk in the scheme of the world, and then some of these other platforms.
It's not a lot.
Interesting. It's not.
Well, Snapchat, I wish we could say more, but we can't because you didn't tell us anything.
No. That's basically
simple as that.
Where should we go from here? Should I keep rolling in through earnings?
Why not?
We'll finish off.
Yeah, let's roll through some.
Yeah.
Spotify is interesting.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Every 10 or so minutes, we're just getting a major lag in the call, but that's okay. So let's keep rolling on through. I also wanted to include Spotify here. The headline was they reported a surprise profit. So well done.
Woo! Yeah, clap.
Big corporation.
Congratulations.
Surprise, we made money.
You've taken enough of our money over time through your subscription fees.
Yeah.
Spotify is a crazy one. Just sorry, before you get into it, Spotify is such an interesting, I guess you can say this for a lot of ad-related businesses, but I find Spotify, because it's you're trying to listen to music. Spotify is by far the most annoying platform. Like, it's like you give them money so that they stop annoying you. I don't know. Personally, I don't think business models like that will work in the long run. I guess ads are kind of the same, but particularly when I'm listening, I don't know why, but I find Spotify ads infuriating because I'm just trying to listen to music and it's like, hey, but did you know you can get Spotify Premium and then you don't have to listen to me interrupting your music right now?
Yeah, the ads are terrible for some reason on Spotify. They're so annoying. Yeah. Yeah, there is something about...
It's definitely the most annoying company. They're just trying to annoy the dollars out of you. That's essentially their business model.
Yeah. Yeah, listening to music is one of those things where I think you just don't want to be interrupted with an ad. It feels super intrusive. Whereas I think YouTube, TV, it feels a bit more organic. It's still annoying, but it feels a little bit more normal for some reason. But there is something really annoying about being on a playlist and then you get interrupted. Which is why they have a lot of paid subscribers. It's a major part of their major part of their business.
The one thing that gets the one thing that really gets me is sometimes on an album, like an artist will make a track, one track that kind of ends that directly flows into the next track. Like they'll very deliberately do that. No. So it like, it like ends and you're like, oh, this is the bit where it flows to that next song and this sounds awesome. And then it's like, da-na-na. Do you know you can get Spotify Premium and you don't have to listen to ads?
Yeah, that's actually so true. That's so true.
That infuriates me.
Oh dear. So anyway, so they're profitable. The economics of the business actually work. All of these numbers are in euros. So if I accidentally say dollars, I don't mean dollars. I mean euros.
You mean euros.
So revenue for the quarter came in at 3.4 billion euros, up 11% year over year. So revenues are continuing to grow. Where did that revenue come from? Part of it is from premium subscribers and part of it is from advertising. So premium subs was 2.9 billion euros. So that's most of their revenue. And then from advertising was 447 million euros. So advertising is, you know, even though they do have a lot of people, which I'll talk about on kind of their free ad supported model, most of their revenue is coming from premium subs. What did I write here? Increases in Spotify's podcast business is driving growth through ads. Yes, they spoke a little bit about this big push they've been making recently, or say recently, the last couple of years, into podcasting and the ads that they can run on podcasting. Of course, even if you have Spotify Premium, you get ads on podcasts, which I'm not sure exactly how I feel about that. That's that's an interesting way.
It's a bit dumb, isn't it?
I think that's kind of silly, honestly. I think if you're paying for no ads, it should be no ads across the entire platform. That's kind of, I don't know about that, but that's their way of you know, driving growth in ads is, hey, we can run ads on podcasts, and it's a whole new thing. It's, you know, it's completely different to running, you know, it's not in the contract.
It's a whole new thing.
I love that. I love that scene so much from The Big Short. It's not 3-day old fish. It's a whole new thing.
It's a whole new thing.
Oh, so good. I've watched that movie too many times. Too many times.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, the other day, we can quote like Wolf of Wall Street, maybe Margin Call, maybe Big Short. These are just, you can just quote them.
The other day I saw it on Netflix and I was like, oh, I haven't watched The Big Short in a while. Maybe I'll watch it. And I hovered over it and it said last watched, it was like July. I was like, damn it. It's only been 2 months.
It's just so good, man. If there's anyone listening to us right now that has not seen The Big Short, go and watch it.
Yeah.
Do yourself a favor. Go and watch it. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Anyway, back to Spotify.
So anyway, yes, back to Spotify. So in terms of their users, monthly active users, so their total users came in at 574 million, which was up 26% year over year. So still growing very, very quickly. That's broken down into premium subs and then the free ad-supported subs. The premium subscriptions was 226 million, up 16% year over year. So that's obviously an enormous amount of people paying whatever, I don't even know how much it is, $12, $15 per month. So yeah, they have an absolutely enormous sub base. And then ad-supported monthly active users came in at 361 million, up 32% year over year. So yeah, pretty significant. Again, they have, I mean, in terms of a premium model business, they have an enormous amount of subscribers, but still able to grow that ad-supported business. The average revenue per user did decline by 6%. However, almost all of it was a currency exchange. So it was actually only down 1% in constant currency. So basically no actual change to their pricing. Their operating expenses during the quarter declined by 13%, which helped them to reach that surprise profit that they reported. And the reason why their costs went down was from two areas where they do spend a lot of money. One is marketing. So they decreased their marketing pretty significantly. It was about 30% or something like that. And they also decreased their personnel costs. Like a lot of these tech companies have been doing recently, they've been laying off a lot of people, or at least trying to find the right amount of people to be running their business. And both of those allowed them to reduce their expenses by 13%, bringing their net income to $65 million compared to minus $166 million last year. So they did make profit, but $65 million on €65 million on 3.4 billion euros of revenue is I mean, they're profitable. Technically.
Don't worry about it, Hamish.
Technically, they are profitable.
Stop comparing. Just give them a clap. We did it. Okay. We're profitable.
Well done. Well done, Spotify. There you go. They've scraped out some profitability.
Nice. Good on you, Spotify. About time.
Well done.
Congratulations. Yep. All right. Is that all we have to talk about for Spotify?
That's it. That's all we've got. Yeah, that's earnings.
Nothing too much. Yep.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
I was going to talk about this China moving to support its economy, but it's not the most interesting story, and we're running out of time. So I'm more inclined to skip it. Yes, and go straight to Q&A. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, all right, sounds good. I'll ask one of these questions to you. Let's start here. We'll start with this one.
Okay, cool.
Thoughts on value versus growth funds. I hold a few thousand in both types with the majority just in the S&P. Thanks. What are your thoughts on... I guess some of these could be ETFs, index funds, on value or growth.
Personally, and obviously not financial advice, this is just what works for me. I tend to stick away from anything that's not kind of just a market tracking ETF or index fund. So like you say that you hold S&P 500 stuff, like me too. I don't know if I have particular thoughts on value versus growth funds. I tend to stick, you know, value and growth stuff more in my active investing, and I'm not so much looking at funds there. I'm just looking at individual companies. But I guess I can talk to the broader topic of value versus growth, because this is like a massive, massive debate in the investing community. Is like, is it better to look at companies that are just growing at massive clips? Or is it better to look at companies that are just super, super cheap, you know, trading at low multiples, cheap at discounted cash flow analysis? And I think this is a really interesting debate because it's almost like we're at war. Like there are two different groups, like it's the growth group versus the value group. But I think that kind of misses the point, because really what we're looking for, and this is like Warren Buffett style, this is Charlie Munger style, is we're looking for what's known as growth at a reasonable price, GARP investing. Yeah. That's essentially, I don't even like, you know, Warren Buffett would probably still shake his head at that because he doesn't like being tied into a particular style or a group of investor, because he says all investing is value investing.
Yeah.
But I think that's the way to look at it. It's not necessarily, oh, we invest in companies that are growing heaps, or we invest in companies that are super cheap. Ideally, what we're looking for is companies that are growing and they're at good prices.
Yeah.
So we incorporate both elements into our own investing approach. But in terms of the question, value versus growth funds, I don't think I have anything much to say on that. I tend to stick away from funds when it comes to that sort of stuff. And I just, for my passive investing, I'm purely market tracking.
Yeah.
What do you think, Hamish?
Yeah, I'm the same. When it comes to funds, I don't kind of specialize into you know, predicting that value will outperform growth. Both kind of categories have done better than the other at different times. And, you know, some people do like to play that. If you're interested, Joel Greenblatt, the last couple years, maybe the last like 18 months, has been talking a lot about how value, which has been underperforming for, I think, more than 5 years now, is going to make a return. So if you're interested in actually, you know, playing the group of value stocks versus the group of growth stocks, Joel Greenblatt will try and convince you that value is, as a group, is going to do well. But that's not something that I participate in personally. And then, yeah, I generally agree with pretty much everything you just said. I think, yeah, Buffett would say that every business can be value. It's less about, you know, how much growth there is, but just comparing the price to future cash flows. Sometimes that might mean that the price is really low compared to current cash flows, And there's not going to be much growth in the future, or the price could be quite high compared to current cash flows, but the cash flows are expected to grow a lot. Both of those can technically be value. So I think he would disagree with the classic distinction of value and growth. And yeah, I would agree with you. Yeah.
Cool. But yeah, thanks for the question. And hopefully that gives you a bit of an insight into what we think. All right, Hamish, can I ask you this one? Let's say that revenue of a company doesn't grow for the next 10 years, but during that time, this company adds each year $10 million in free cash flow. In theory, should the price for a share be higher in 10 years from now?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm going to go ahead and presume you mean their free cash flow grows by $10 million every year, so their cash flows are growing rather than just producing $10 million every year. But yeah, I mean, in theory, you know, holding all else equal, I guess. Yes, I think the way that you should think about the value of a company is always, what do they have now and what will they produce in the future? So what do they have on their books in terms of, you know, cash and liabilities and that sort of thing? And then also what will they produce in the future? So if over the next 10 years, the company produces a lot of free cash flow and just stacks it on the balance sheet, it doesn't pay a dividend, it just puts it on the balance sheet, then the company should be worth more because it has more. And then you would have to also consider, you know, what will it do beyond, you know, going forward as well? Will it continue to grow? Is it going to slow down? That's also obviously really important. But that's what the value of a business is. Like, what are you buying into? What do they own now? Do they have a lot of equity or do they have negative equity? Do they have heaps of debts? What do they have now? And then what will they produce in the future? And that's how you can get to, you know, what a company should be worth.
It's all about what do you get as the owner of the business?
Yeah.
What can you get as the owner of the business?
Yeah.
Modeling it from there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. Yeah. Okay. Should we do one more?
Let's do one more.
Do this one maybe up the top.
Yeah. What is an investing mistake you've made regarding the analysis of a specific company? Any mistakes?
It's an investing mistake you've made regarding your analysis of a specific company. Most of my big mistakes, as I call them,
big mistakey,
have come around assessing management. I know I've said this before, but I don't know. It's like in the early days, it was much more just me thinking that, you know, just basically just the overconfidence effect, just thinking I knew more than I did.
Yeah.
That was definitely, that was an error in myself that you quickly come to realize that anyway, because you just lose a whole bunch of money and they're like, oh, okay. But in terms of actually the analysis of a company, usually it's the management or me believing in the management more and not really scrutinizing what the numbers are saying. Because, I don't know, some management teams, they're just good salespeople. I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, don't worry. But in the future, it'll be better. Trust us. We're going to do so good next year. But when you actually look at the hard numbers, don't think about what they're saying, but just look at the hard numbers. Maybe the story is, it's not looking great.
Yeah.
But then I kind of get brought around from a management going, it's okay, because next year is going to be great. And then inevitably it's not great next year and then I've lost money. So
yeah.
I think probably the bit I need to get better at is really cutting through management's BS or be better at identifying it.
Yeah, I think management's just really hard. It's probably why, it is why I put such a big emphasis on founder-run companies and management teams companies where the management team owns an enormous amount of stock. Like, they're basically shareholders themselves.
Yeah.
Because it helps to eliminate, it doesn't eliminate everything, but it does help to align the management team with you as an owner. And it can remove a lot of the uncertainties that just kind of generally exist with you not knowing the management team. They could be lying to you and ultimately you don't really know, but if they're the founder and if it's their baby, then there's a much higher chance, that they're actually going to do the best thing, for the shareholders. So I'd probably agree with that. Other mistakes, I think misjudging, the economic moat that a company has. I've probably done a couple of times just not going deep enough on the company and its competitive position and maybe kind of falling in love too much with the company rather than viewing it objectively, I think is a challenge that investors kind of face. Fairly common. So yeah, I'd say that too.
Yeah, nice. All right, very good. Yeah. Very, very good. Well, all right, team. I think we might wrap things up.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, thanks.
Sorry. we've suffered lag.
You go.
Is Hamish going to talk? Am I going to talk? We have suffered a little bit of lag this episode, but you know, we plow through it. I like the raw kind of feel of our podcast. It's not like super, you don't have like music fading in and fading out and this and that, and you don't have like, and join us after the break as we'll discover what Ray Dalio said about it. Like, it's none of that. It's just two blokes having a chat. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes we have a bit of lag, and that's just, we just got to combat that.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Is what it is.
I'll take the outro, Hamish. Thank you guys very much for watching. We do appreciate it. Thanks, Hamish, as always, for joining me.
No worries.
If you wanted to submit a question for next week, just make sure you go to the most recent version of the podcast, drop us a comment, or ask a question in the Spotify question box. And with that said, hope you guys have a great week. Hope you enjoyed today's episode, and we'll see you back here next week.
See you guys.